Recording. Right? Because the red light's on. They're going to hear and say this shit. Yeah, look. Hey. It's time. It's just started when we did that. 17, 18. We've been starting.
Again, I'm Daniel. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Daniel.
I'm Joshua. And I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Joshua.
First of all, I'd like to thank everybody who put this thing together and for the opportunity to have us up here to share our experience, strength, and hope with this process. I'm going to go ahead and read a version of the set-aside prayer, and we'll get started. God, please help us set aside everything we think we know about the four-step inventory process, fear, and sex conduct, so that we may have an open mind and a new experience with all these things. Please help us to see the truth. Amen.
Amen.
Again, I'm Joshua, and I'm an alcoholic. First off, it's an honor to be up here in front of other people that understand me. It's truly a blessing to have this opportunity. So we're going to do fear and sex inventory, sexual conduct. We're going to get right into the book. I'm going to give a little bit of my experience. Daniel's going to give some of his. I think our goal is to try to get through all of it in the book first. So I'm going to go ahead and actually, last night I went ahead and listed some of my own fears that I have right now, and I want to share some of those with you that are still present in my life today. So right now, here's some of them. I got fear of being alone, fearing of being accepted, fear of looking at myself and going deeper, fear of my thoughts and feelings, and of course, the ever-pressing financial fear that never seems to fucking go away. My whole life, and even today, even in my addiction, my life has been fear-driven. You know, this says the 100 forms of fear. Fear, worry, shame, guilt. I feel like my life is run by my fear sometimes. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and start reading. The bottom of page 67. Notice the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Miss Jones, the employer, and the wife. The short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. And I like that sentence. Touches about every aspect of our lives. That means that fear still is present in my family, at work, my friendships. It's literally everywhere. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. Now here is a crazy sentence that I didn't understand for the longest time. It is set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Now, for a long time, I didn't know what the hell that sentence meant. I kind of always skipped over it and was like, okay, it's one of those weird sentences they say back in the day. But really what that sentence means is the ego wants us to be right and makes judgment about a situation until I make that fear come true. For example, with my ex-wife, I had that fear of being alone, so therefore I pushed her away. I left her before she could leave me. I destroyed the relationship, right? And that was my own fear. The first example I ever had of fear in my recovery was 45 days sober, something around there. It was my first recovery job. It was a Food Depot in the meat market. I don't recommend that job, by the way, at all. My first day, I called my sponsor afterwards, and he said, "How was your first day?" I said, "I'm quitting, dude. This place sucks. The people suck." And he's like, "Why do they suck?" I'm like, "None of them would talk to me. None of them would. I hate them all. I quit. These people are." And he's like, "It sounds like you're living in fear." And my initial reaction is like, "What are you talking about, dude? Like, how is that me living in fear? Like, you're wrong. Like, these people are just are bad people." He said, "You have a fear of being accepted, right?" He's like, "Try going in tomorrow and just being yourself and see how that works out for you." So I went in the next day, and I did that. And lo and behold, people started talking to me, you know, and I was able to let go of that fear. But I have to have other people tell me that I'm fearful sometimes in a situation. You got anything on that?
Yeah, it's been in my most recent experience that all of my fears are connected. They're all connected to each other. You know, the fear of looking bad, the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, the fear of inadequacy, fear of abandonment. They're all tied together. You know, false experiences appearing real. You know, and my sponsor tells me that fear does not exist because it's the future, right? And the only thing that does exist is right here, right now. So I got 1 foot in the past, which is resentment. I got 1 foot in the future, and my now is effed, as he put it. You know, and that's what drives my selfishness and my self-centeredness, because I'm still trying to survive, right? I'm still trying to protect myself, which, out of my bitter experience, is insufficient. I'm still playing God. And we all know how that turns out.
Another example is, for this whole thing, for example, I had a fear that you guys were going to judge me. Therefore, I'm going to judge you before you can judge me. And therefore, my ego is going to come into play. And I'm going to have to come up here and spit some, like, I got 30 years of sobriety under my belt, speaker tape, shit, what, I'm on here now. But yeah, and that's what my ego tells me to do. Now I have to be somebody that I'm not. And therefore, God is not going to be able to speak through me properly because I'm forcing a situation. In reality, the only thing I can give you is what I have right now. And God tells me to look at the facts. I woke up sober today. That's it. Today is a new day. I'm going to gain new experiences from this. I'm going to gain new knowledge. And then I got today. That's all I got right now. I'm going to keep reading. Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Now here's a really, really good sentence. I love this one. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. And that goes back to step three. Basically, I cannot do this on my own. When I do things on my own, I get high or drunk. Period. So if it's not God, it can be the people in this room, from my experience, my sponsor, my network. I have to utilize everything that I got in my toolkit to be able to get through my fears properly. You want to?
Yeah, some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. You know, I had these stage characters that I would put on to the world, you know, that I was this gangster, that I was this thug, right? I would get into fights I really didn't want to get into, and it had nothing to do with me. But I was trying to show you that I had my chest poked out, that I wasn't afraid, when really, deep down inside, I was so full of fear. So full of fear, you know, and that just added to the inauthenticity that I presented to the world. Like, I wanted you to think this about me, that I was some badass, when really I wasn't, you know, seeking that approval, that acceptance. I just wanted to be a part of, and I was willing to sacrifice anything to do it. That's how much I craved that. And that was just that false security for my fear of abandonment. You know, fear that you weren't going to like the real me, right? And that's part of that fact-facing and that fact-finding process, right? Let me show you my insides, what's really going on.
Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. We are now on a different basis. The basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust in finite God rather than our finite selves. Trust, trust. Trust. There's a reason why I underline trust in that paragraph. It's because I have to trust God. I have to trust my network, my sponsor, the people I gain my knowledge from, other than myself, because I suck at giving myself advice. When I am President Josh gets high. That's just the way it works. We're in the world to play. We trust. We are in the world to play the role he assigns, just to the extent that we do so as we think we would he would have us, and humbly rely on him. Does he enable us to match calamity with serenity? Humbly rely on him is a big word to me because I'm not very good at it. I'm not a very humble person most of the time. So when I get vulnerable with somebody and I say, this is what I'm afraid of, and then someone brings to light why I'm afraid of that and I don't want to accept that, I'm like, no, that's not why. You know, I have my own reasons why I'm afraid of this. I have to humbly rely on other people and God to give me the solution that I need to get through these fears. Fear of being alone, still there. Fear of being accepted, still there. It's not as strong as it was when I first got sober, but it's still there. It's very strong sometimes. I only have a daily relief from that. I call my sponsor and say, hey man, I'm having a real big issue with this fear today. So what does he have me do? Write 2 pages in my phone on said fear. Do I want to do that? No. But I do it.
Let me touch on something real quick.
Go ahead.
You know, that enabling us to match calamity with serenity, I got some calamity going on in my life right now. You know, but I'm able to walk through it with grace and dignity because I stay connected to the power. And that is the only reason that I'm able to do that. You know, my mom was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer about a month ago. And, you know, the fear came, right? All these possible scenarios that was all rooted back to how it was going to affect me, what I was going to lose, right? Back to self once again, right? Play the role that he assigns, not me, right? To be the son, to be the brother for my sisters, right? To just show up and be present. And that is where God is found, in the present, you know? And, you know, my sisters are adding on to the calamity, you know? And rather than taking their inventory, which I did in the beginning, right? They don't have a program, I do. This is how you should do this, right? Like, let me bring a little God into your life, right? You need to take an inventory. Here's how you do it, right? You're caught up in false belief systems right now. You know, they're going to deal how they're going to deal because they're doing the best they know how to do with what they have, right? And I don't have to get caught up in what they're doing and how they're doing it. I'm showing up for my mom. I'm showing up for my sisters. What do you need me to do? What can I do to lighten the burden, right? How can I just show up, right? Bring hope where there is none, right? And that's the gift that I was given by staying connected to a God of my experience, a God that's personal to me. You know, one of the things my sponsor had me do for step 2 is list all the qualities that I would want my God to have. Right, some of those qualities are omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, right? All-knowing, all-powerful, always, everywhere. Right, and so I have a clear idea, a real clear picture of what my God is capable of, which is unlimited. You know, not to put him in a box, you know, but that's just my experience. That's my current experience. I'm still able to experience joy and peace, you know, laugh with other people and not let this fear consume me, be that evil and corroding thread, right? So that's all I got on that.
I mean, I feel like it's in our condition to bury our fears as deep as we possibly can, but then we're run by them at the same time, and it's crazy how that works. When I first did a fears lift with my sponsor, I actually had trouble thinking of some fears. It was nuts. I think I had like spiders and cockroaches, being dope sick, of course, one of them, going to jail, all these things. And, you know, he brought up some of these. He's like, do you fear being alone? I was like, oh, I don't think so, maybe. Let me think about it for a minute. And it's taken me years to really be able to be open-minded to looking at my fears as deep as I've been able to. A whole lot of relief comes from that, not giving that fear power. We give fear so much power. I feared getting sober for the longest time. I feared leaving the solution that I currently had, which was drugs and alcohol. That was my best friend that I had. It's the only thing that I had that never, in my mind, let me down. So now you're telling me I have to give that up? And the scariest time of my life was when that didn't work anymore. How crazy is that? This one thing that I thought, no matter how shitty my life gets, no matter how messed up my mind gets, I still have this solution to make me feel better and forget about what I think I really am or who I perceive myself to be. So when I didn't have that anymore, and it wasn't by choice, it just stopped working. Now I have to really look at myself, and that's a scary thing for me to look at my past, look at my resentments, my harms, and my fears. I have to get vulnerable with somebody, and nobody likes to do that. You know, that's a scary thing in itself. Financial fear. I'm sure a lot of people in here have financial fear. No matter how much money I make, I still have financial fear. That fear is still there. You got anything more on that?
No.
Keep moving. Okay, keep going. Let's start reading.
We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness, paradoxically is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. Right? That's that being an agent for God. Right? Work in and through me. I have to connect to the power for the power to work in and through me. We ask Him to remove our fear, right? We pray to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, right then and there, we commence to outgrow fear. And commence means we begin to. I never fully outgrow it. I still have to say that prayer each and every time it comes up for me to get unblocked.
That last paragraph is one of those paragraphs where I have to read multiple times because there's so much information in that small paragraph. It takes a while. You know, I'm still burnt out sometimes. I still got to, like, think shit through. We never apologize for God, instead we let Him demonstrate through us, which basically means we're going back to step three again. I'm going to let go of Josh's will, and I'm going to take on this other form of higher power and not live in my will. And listen to Him. Listen, and that can be network, sponsor, whatever you want it to be. God. And then we commence to outgrow fear. Fear is always going to be in my life. Always. I'm never going to be not have fear. And I thought once I got sober that all my fears were going to be gone. As a matter of fact, the more time I got sober, the deeper my fears got. It was kind of insane, actually. But I didn't want to look at those. I just hope that I get the daily relief every day. I say a prayer in the morning, if I remember, or I say a prayer on the way to work, if I forget to do the prayer in the morning. And I ask Him, just let me be of service today, and just let me be myself. That's my prayer to myself every day. Let me be myself. Let me not force anything upon anybody. And let me help me give my experience, strength, and hope to whoever is willing to accept it. Whoever is willing to accept it. That's the key word. Okay.
You know, and in the beginning, like walking through fears, I didn't have a whole lot of faith, you know, like getting sober, right? Like, I hope this is going to work. I'm coming to this meeting because I hope I'm going to hear what I need to hear. And I'm calling my sponsor because I'm hoping he's going to tell me something that I don't already know about the problem and the solution. Right, I'm reading this big book because I hope I'm going to find some answer to the problem. And then over a period of time, you know, I heard somebody say once that faith is hope with a track record. Right, there's a difference between believing and knowing. And today, out of experience of seeing and feeling God's presence show up and walking me through the fear, I know He's got me when I access Him. Now about sex. Many of us, especially me, needed an overhauling here. You know, but we try to be sensible on this question, right? And I'm going to kind of jump around a little bit. It says, here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature and a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that there isn't the right kind, that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow men no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. Mm. We all have sex problems. Mm. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Right? So that's just part of me being human. But what can I do about it? We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where was I at fault? What should I have done instead? And that last part was key for me. What should I have done instead, right? Because, you know, I was really dumb when I got here, and still am, you know, which I think is what has saved me. You know, I was like, oh, just not do that, right? Just not do what I did. The sponsor's like, no, it's not that simple. You know, I need you to go a little bit further. What should you have done instead? Let's dig a little deeper. You know, I got this all down on paper and I looked at it. Right? In this way, I tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for my future sex life. Right? I tried to. You know, it doesn't even talk about sanity being restored until I get to the 10th step, which is, I found, part of the reason why it is suggested that within your first year or working the steps, you stay out of a relationship, right? we subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or was it not, right? We asked God to mold our ideals and to help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed. And I want to read something from a book that I brought. You know, I felt God speak to me through this book this morning. It's called Surfing for God. It's Discovering the Divine Desire Beneath Sexual Struggle. And it's by Michael John Cusick. I'm just going to read a quick passage out of here. It says, why does your fire burn outside the fireplace? Over the years, I've heard sermons and messages comparing our sexual desires to a fire burning in a fireplace. When the fire burns within the fireplace, it represents sexual desires within God's boundaries and design. Here, it can be pleasurable and life-giving. When the fire burns outside of the fireplace, it represents sexual desires expressed outside of God's boundaries and design. In this case, it causes damage and destruction. Right? A close friend owns a ranch in the high country of Colorado. About 7 years ago, the entire region, including his ranch, was infested with pine beetles, a perennial killer of forests. With so many trees infested, damaged, or dying, the ranch was at very high risk for a catastrophic wildfire. After lengthy consultations with forestry experts, he decided that the best long-term solution was to cut down every dead or infested tree. At tremendous cost and effect, and after countless hours of labor, his ranch no longer faces the threat of a wildfire. Hundreds of acres of mountainside are now bare, yet new life is beginning to emerge. And when the wildfire season begins, any neighboring flames will have nothing to consume. Certain conditions make pine trees vulnerable. Poor growing conditions, drought, fire damage, and root disease. Spiritually, souls resemble that mountain forest. The interior forest of our souls is strong and vibrant. But like the trees on my friend's ranch, our souls can become dry, damaged, and vulnerable. Under certain conditions, the smallest spark of legitimate desire can ignite our vulnerable parts and burn far outside the fireplace of healthy, God-designed boundaries. Can you identify the dead logs, broken branches, and dried-out parts of your soul? How has your soul experienced drought, a root disease, or poor growing conditions? If you don't know the answers to these questions, I can almost guarantee that the fire of legitimate, God-given desire will ignite your brokenness and burn outside the fireplace with a ferocity that seems unstoppable. If you know the answer, if you understand your brokenness, then your efforts to deforest the dead trees will create a fire line that prevents the wildfire of sexual passion from burning out of control. Coming to terms with our brokenness is a daunting process, but we must understand it in order to experience true freedom. And that's been my experience. You know, I wanted. Did you want to share anything on that?
Oh, thank you. It's from my experience with the sexual conduct is I needed the sexual stuff to get validation from others, and therefore I harmed a lot of people. I had this misconception before I did the 4-step, of course I did, of what a sexual inventory really was. So the first one I actually did wrong, and my sponsor was like, dude, what are you doing? It's people you've harmed with sex. And what I mean by that, manipulation. What am I trying to gain? Or what are my motives? My motives were never pure, especially in my addiction. Because if I'm with somebody else, I no longer have to look at myself, right? I put all that on another person, so I harmed a lot of people. So my conception of the sex inventory has changed. It's still changing, to be honest with you. It really took me a long time to get that concept down, of really looking at my motives.
It says, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical technical advice. And for me, you know, you ask 30 different alcoholics or addicts in recovery about this, you're going to get 30 different answers based out of 30 different experiences. Right? I had to seek out what I wanted. Who had what I want? You know? Long-term committed relationship without infidelity. You know, stuff like that. Someone not going to massage parlors, getting prostitutes, you know, not manipulating out of validation to secure their fear of abandonment. But we're really, it was more of a giving and an offering of oneself than a take, right? And I really want to touch on this. You know, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. And that is fact out of my experience. I had a year and a half sober. I had 2 sponsees. I was going to 5 meetings a week. Service commitment to my home group, doing a nightly inventory, kind of. honest with my network, right? I was honest with women, but still manipulated them. Mm-hmm. Right? Hey, I really enjoy your company. I'm not looking for anything serious. If the opportunity presents itself for something intimate to happen, I'd like to take that opportunity. Get this whole speech rehearsed, right? Right? And I caused harm within the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I drank. I relapsed. You know, that is my experience. And that behavior is not okay. It is not okay. You want to talk on?
Yeah. But dude, with me, if I don't really look at my fears, it goes right into the sex inventory. This is kind of like how you touched on. If I'm not okay with myself, if I'm not looking at myself on a daily basis, which means I can act all fine and dandy in a meeting, I can spit some super wisdom in a meeting, but if I'm not bringing that outside of the meeting, if I'm not bringing that program to my relationships and the people that I'm actually spending my life with, it means nothing. right? So if I'm going to a meeting, I'm spinning all the spiritual stuff, and then I'm leaving that meeting, I'm going and hitting on a newcomer or something like that. That's not me being spiritually fit, right? That's me trying to present well. That's me putting on this stage character. And I think a lot of us still do it to this day. It doesn't matter if you got 3 days sober or 30 years sober. Fears, sexual conduct, our manipulation still arise in our lives on a daily basis. You know, and I have to check my motives. I have to be held accountable by God and my sponsor. I have to let him know what I got going on in my life. And when I'm talking to somebody, what is my motive behind this? What do I want to gain from this conversation or this relationship? Friendship, whatever you want to call it. It always starts off as a friendship in the beginning. And I'll give you a quick story. My first sponsor, I kept talking to this girl at a meeting. And Brandon will attest to this as well. Every meeting, I would talk to this one girl. And my sponsor asked me, "What are your motives?" "Oh, I'm just trying to help her." "You're what? You're trying to help?" "Yeah, you know, I'm talking to her. I'm being her friend. You know, I'm doing..." "Oh, okay. Cool. So if she asked you on a date, would you go?" "Well, hell yeah, I'd go. Of course I would go." He's like, "Then your motives are not pure. You're not trying to help this person. She's got X amount of days sober. Yeah, you only have 90, but you are not trying to be of service to this person. You need to direct her to the women's side. You need to direct her to a woman's sponsor." And I was like, "Dang, dude, you just totally blew up my spot." But that's what I need, right? I need to tell people what I have going on so they can call me out and make me look at a situation differently. Because I really honestly perceived it that I was trying to help this young lady. But my motives were not that way.
To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal for guidance in each questionable situation, which there's a lot, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. Not what I want to do, but the right thing. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others, right? Particularly sponsees and same sex. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. You know, and it's also been my experience that when I work with guys and I just see how broken they really are and how it's manifesting into their relationships with the opposite sex when that opportunity presents itself, it reminds me of what I don't want to go through, the harm that I don't want to cause myself and others. You know, God uses them to speak to me in most cases. You know, and today, like, I know that without God, I'm effed. It doesn't matter how pretty you are, how much you validate me and stroke my ego, right? You will not quench that thirst or appetite, which can only be granted to me by power, which is God for me. It does not matter. I will not stay sober.
There's always seems to be a reason why in early recovery I tend to find myself looking to be in a relationship, right? It's my go-to. 30 days sober out of treatment. I need a girlfriend, whatever. That's just me. It's always been me. Because I am deathly afraid to look at myself. And that goes back to fear. I don't want to be alone. Fear of being accepted. And this person is going to save me. This person is going to validate me and make me not look at myself anymore. Essentially fill in that void. Right? That's where I go with it every single time. And therefore, I hurt somebody when I do that. There's been a lot of instances in this program where if your motives are not pure and it comes out, that other person, they may go get high. And then where are you at? That person's not here anymore. Now you have all that guilt of, man, I was totally using this person to make me feel a certain way. I really didn't feel that way about said person. And now that person's no longer in these rooms anymore. Did I physically make that person go get drunk or high? No, but I sure as hell had a part in it. That's for sure. That's why I try to stay in my lane, right? I talk to my network before I approach a situation. My fear tells me that I don't need to do that. My fear tells me to go the first thing that I see. What can make me feel different? If it's not drugs and alcohol, it's going to be a relationship. That's the next thing. Sex, women, men, all that stuff. That's what's going to change the feeling for me. Because I sure as hell am afraid of this book. There's a whole lot of big words in here. You know, I have to read a paragraph 4 or 5 times before I understand it. But then I got the person over there that's been looking at me the entire meeting. That seems easier. I'm going to go do that. But guess what? I'm back in treatment 2 months later. Right? It's just, it's a quick fix, and it never turns out well.
I guess we can take some questions. I don't know where we are on time.
We read the whole thing. We finished it. 10 minutes. Up here, guys, I do have an example of fears lists and a fear inventory. If you're interested, come grab one. They're pretty cool. Personally, I would love to thank you guys for letting us be up here. It's amazing to be around people that understand us. Nobody understands us better than us. I love you guys. I wouldn't be here without anybody in this room. And it's crazy. My first spiritual experience I ever had in the program of AA was around a shit ton of alcoholics and addicts at the International Convention. And we have more power in numbers. You know, so if you have questions on fear, I know it was short, but it's a very powerful subject. I have some material for you guys if you'd like it, but that's all I got.
Thanks for letting us be here.
Oh, we're gonna end with fear of prayer. Sorry, my bad. Just kidding. You thought you were out. No. Yeah. God, thank you for helping me be honest enough to see this truth about myself, and now that you have shown me the truth about my fears, please remove these fears from me. Lord, please help me outgrow my fears and direct my attention to what you would have me be. Father, demonstrate through me and help me become that which you would have me be. Help me do thy will always. Thank you, guys.